right, you're listening to All Hit Radio, and it's 53 degrees at 13 minutes past the hour. And right now in our All Request line, I've got Mike Ledgerwood on the phone. Hey, babe, what would you like to hear? Hey, babe, I'm sorry, I can't hear you too well. You're going to have to speak a little closer into the phone. Okay, babe, what would you like to hear again?
We are observing your Earth.
Hey, Mike, I'm sorry, babe, but that's not on our playlist. And by the way, you sound great over the phone. Anyway, if you give us your request, we'll be glad to play it for you, babe. So let's hear it.
We are observing your Earth.
Listen, Mike, I'm sorry, babe, but we can't...
And we'd like to make...
I'm sorry, Mike, we... There's...
A contact with you. Baby.
You're actually listening to CKUT 90.3 FM radio, and this is Easy Sonic Living. Tonight, the Aliens episode.
In the 39th year of the 20th century came the Great Disillusionment. Near the end of October, business was better. The war scare was over. More men were back at work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30th, the Crosley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening in on radios.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Central Time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Ladies and gentlemen, following on the news given in our bulletin a moment ago, the Government Meteorological Bureau has requested the large observatories of the country to keep an astronomical watch on any further disturbances occurring on the planet Mars. Due to the unusual nature of this occurrence, we have arranged an interview with a noted astronomer, Professor Pearson, who will give us his views on this event. In a few moments, we will take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, New Jersey. We return you until then to the music of Ramon Raquello and his orchestra.
Do when the aliens get here. Austin is powered up enough to fill that landscape. 2.7 in the cockpit. Chemicals rise to Saturn and cross. From the Mercury astronaut, George Austin. From the economics liberation in Boston. Massachusetts protected by the Army and Rebels. Special effect units, navigational training. 4 altitudes, 3 compulsive rates. Phoenix, Arizona, Yelona. Aliens looking in my face. Reserve Marines. Coming in, coming in. Coming in, coming in. Aliens. 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 DC, stop. Scene in Texas. Stop. Stop. The grayish blue flying saucer, stop. We flowing. The highway that night, the orange beam coming down was right. Truck stop, not a myth. Remember that light. The orange beam, not a myth. Remember that light. Observation, not a myth. Remember that light. You've been abducted by yes. Ready, steam full engine, service space, satellites, watch check the parking lights, connect the inputs in, protected by steel, carbon 10, gasoline thrust, 17.10, observation, aliens under frustration, kamikaze gear, security information, close your window, send men out the post, hold your location, look around, that's right, we moving up downtown, closing in, hosing in, stop, that's right, stop, dozing stop. In, you moving stop. With the heat, we come frozen in, stop, stop. Stop.
Look around, moving up downtown. Look around, that's right, that's right. Protoplasm, protection suit, 4 o'clock and the fire engages. Aliens. A telephone code, Earthman, you know it was us. Aliens. With two cans of that's right, became dangerous. Aliens. That's right, look around, moving up. You've been abducted, aliens. That's right, stop. Look around, look around, aliens. You've been abducted, that's right, round, stop. We moving up downtown. Coming in,
aliens.
Coming in, aliens.
What are your thoughts on the aliens, man?
They're here. They're here right now. They're walking among us on two legs. Human-like. Oh, yeah.
How do you spot a human-alien hybrid?
I think it's the smell. They buy Axe at the grocery stores because they think that that's what the human teens want. The human teens, they disguise themselves as that. Look at this means of conveyance. Now, look at that right there. Is that human? Because if you had an alien scent about you, you would cover it with Axe.
Do you plan on raiding tonight, sir?
Oh, I've already been in.
What was in there?
They're in there. Totally. Yes.
Anyways, man, thanks for the interview. Good luck. You're a brave soldier.
Ok, c'est quoi un extraterrestre?
C'est quelque chose de vert avec des antennes.
Ouais.
C'est quelque chose de bizarre.
C'est quelque chose qui parle comme ça.
Et qu'est-ce qu'ils mangent?
Quelque chose dans la planète.
Quelque chose qui vient de leur planète?
Comme le gaz.
Le gaz. Est-ce qu'ils mangent?
Des escargots puants.
Ouais, ok.
Ou des vers de terre.
Des vers de terre, mais des vers de terre qui viennent de la planète Terre.
Aussi, ils peuvent lire notre pensée.
Ils peuvent quoi?
Lire notre pensée.
Ah oui? Comment ils font pour lire nos pensées?
Ils font juste nous regarder.
Oui.
Pour nous lire dans notre pensée.
Et pourquoi tu penses qu'ils viennent des fois sur la Terre?
Parce que pour voir est-ce que c'est vrai qu'ils lisent leur
puis aussi, pensée. J'ai un livre d'extraterrestres, puis ça dit qu'ils peuvent lire sur notre pensée. Puis aussi, ils peuvent être dans la planète Terre, comme ressembler comme une personne, être déguisé, ressembler comme une personne vraiment. Mais en vrai, c'est un extraterrestre.
Woke up this morning with light in my eyes, and then realized it was still dark outside. It was a light coming down from the sky. I don't know who or why. Must be those strangers that come every night. Those saucer-shaped lights put people uptight. Leave blue-green footprints that glow in the dark. I hope they get home all right. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride? Woke up this morning, I was feeling quite weird. Had flies in my beard, my toothpaste was smeared. Over my window, they'd written my name. Said, so long, we'll see you again. Hey, Mr.
you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride? Won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carl Phillips speaking to you from the observatory at Princeton. I'm standing in a large semicircular room, pitch black except for an oblong split in the ceiling. Through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars that cast a kind of frosty glow over the intricate mechanism of the huge telescope. The ticking sound you hear is the vibration of the clockwork. Professor Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through the giant lens. I'll ask you to be patient, ladies and gentlemen, during any delay that may arise during our interview. Besides the ceaseless watch of the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by telephone or other communications. During this period, he is in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, may I begin our questions?
Any time, Mr. Phillips.
Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red disk swimming in a blue sea. Transverse stripes across the disk. Quite distinct now because Mars happens to be at the point nearest the Earth, in opposition, as we call it.
In your opinion, what do these transverse stripes signify, Professor Pearson?
Not canals, I can assure you, Mr. Phillips.
Safe.
Although that's the popular conjecture of those who imagine Mars to be inhabited. From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Then you're quite convinced, as a scientist, that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars?
I say the chances against it are 1,000 to 1.
And yet, how do you account for these gas eruptions occurring on the surface of the planet at regular intervals?
Phillips, I cannot account for it.
By the way, Professor, for the benefit of our listeners, how far is Mars from the Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
Well, that seems a safe enough distance. Just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Someone has just handed Professor Pearson a message. While he reads it, let me remind you that we are speaking to you from the observatory in Princeton, New Jersey, where we are interviewing the world-famous astronomer, Professor Pearson. One moment, please.
Portugal, October 13th, 1917. During what had been a bright and cloudless day, the skies suddenly turned dark and foreboding. For those who were there to witness it, their world was about to turn upside down. Three children had claimed to see what they believed was the Virgin Mary. She promised to give the people a sign from God.
Perhaps as many as 100,000 people watched as the sun seemed to change into an opaque spinning disk in the sky.
During those manifestations, the children were told that God was very, very angry with the world and that there would be punishment.
The incident near the small village of Fatima was labeled a miracle by some and a hoax by others. But to ancient astronaut theorists, the event is considered an extraterrestrial encounter.
In Fatima, we see mysterious events happening, but we do not really know whether we are dealing with a religious phenomenon or whether we are dealing with an extraterrestrial UFO kind of phenomenon. We know that the apparition didn't really identify herself as who she was. It's within the context of religion that she is named the Virgin Mary. The question is, if she's not the Virgin Mary, then who is she?
Perhaps even more bizarre is the fact that less than 1 year after the event, an estimated 50 million people were dead. Victims of the worst plague in recorded history.
I think we're dealing with demonic aliens. The shadow government has been engaged with these non-human entities. They're basically planning a planetary takeover. The scenario described in the book of Revelation, which is the apocalypse. I think they come from other dimensions to roll out this global dystopian technocratic beast matrix system. And we will become enslaved. They're being programmed with Enochian magic, occult magic, and they're basically casting spells and curses on us. They want to achieve one hive mind consciousness where the god is technology.
So what can we do now to avoid being enslaved by aliens in the future?
Pick up a copy of my book. Alien and UFO Disclosure are closer than you think. I actually describe the origins of the UFO phenomenon, where it came from. Nazi rocket scientists, you know, literally channeling demonic spirits, ultimately became the U.S. space program. What they essentially did is they opened a demonic portal. It's from then on that we see the proliferation of UFO phenomenon, the alien abductions. We're ready for the fight, and we're going to fight to the end.
In the middle of the 6th century, another virus nearly succeeded in wiping out most of humanity. The Justinian Plague.
There aren't really good records back then of how many millions of people died, but a significant percentage of the world died.
You know, everything was going on okay one minute, and then all of a sudden, people have kind of rotting in front of you. Wow, where's this come from?
Like the Plague of Athens, the Justinian Plague was accompanied by multiple reports of strange sightings in the sky.
People reported seeing strange objects in the sky that they called glowing gold shields. Had visions of bronze ships in the sky and headless creatures.
And whenever these events took place, in the middle of daylight, by the way, people fell ill. Then something would be witnessed again up in the sky, and there would be another outbreak.
According to modern-day astronomers, at the time of the Justinian Plague, there was an unusually high concentration of cosmic activity.
Islamic literature of the day was very clear in stating that the skies were darkened on many occasions and people were frightened by meteor storms and comets impacting the Earth. There's also direct evidence, I think, from a subject called dendrochronology, thicknesses of tree rings, an indication of the amount of light that we receive during the summer months. For the period from 530 to 550 or thereabouts AD, we find that the tree ring thicknesses almost vanish, showing that the skies were really darkened. That's again consistent with comets breaking up, meteors breaking up in the sky. So one has to then speculate if these dust particles that were darkening the skies also contained viruses or bacteria.
Is there somewhere out there in deep space where somebody has the technology to actually send over things to Earth so that what looks to be a normal mechanism of delivery actually becomes a very high-tech method of delivery, and we have no idea that we are part of an intergalactic warfare?
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the Earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet across an immense ethereal gulf, minds that are to our minds as ours are to the beasts in the jungle. Intellects, vast, cool, and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
If everything's ready here on the dark side of the moon, play the five tones. Give her six quavers, then pause.
She sent us four quavers, a group of five quavers, a group of four semi-quavers.
These phrases have in common are five, six.
I hope somebody's taking all this down.
What are we saying to each other?
It seems they're trying to teach us a basic tonal vocabulary.
It's the first day of school, fellas.
Take everything from the lady.
Five, two,
follow her pattern.
Note three, one.
The fact that NASA conceal information from the public has led many to believe that they are aware of the existence of alien life. And one of the most talked about cases of a NASA cover-up comes from Dr. Edgar Mitchell. He was part of the Apollo 14 space mission in 1971, and during his two lunar missions, he spent 33 hours on the moon. Dr. Mitchell said that he was aware of several UFO visits during his career, but each one had been covered up. He said that workers at the space agency had described aliens as little people who look strange to us. Dr. Mitchell stated that their technology is far more sophisticated than ours, and if they were hostile, we would be gone by now. He is also told that the believed Roswell alien crash of 1947 was real, and the reason it was covered up was because the US did not want the Soviet to know of the craft's technology, and they did not know if the apparent alien being was hostile or not. Apparently, officials from NASA have commented on Dr. Mitchell's statements by saying, NASA does not track UFOs and is not involved in any sort of cover-up about alien life on this planet or anywhere in the universe. Dr. Mitchell is a great American, but we do not share his opinions on this issue. But Edgar continues to claim that aliens and alien craft are real and is positive that we are being watched right now. Another thing people more recently have pointed out is the International Space Station's HD live feed is often cut when objects are seen in space. In 2014, NASA allegedly cut the live feed coming from the Earth viewing cameras mounted on the space station just when a mysterious UFO appeared to hover over the Earth. UFO watchers claim that the drop-off in the live feeds as soon as a UFO comes into view is an obvious and deliberate attempt to hide what they believe are regular sightings of alien spacecrafts observing Earth. Some say this is the moon or a lens flare, and others believe it's an alien craft. Also, UFO watcher Toby Lund apparently spotted a UFO on the live stream outside the space station before the stream was interrupted for around 15 seconds. Needless to say, it's certainly strange that NASA cut the video when things like this happen. Maybe it's just a coincidence due to them experiencing technical difficulties, or maybe they know something that we don't.
Thank you.
In 1347, ships full of Italian sailors died suddenly after being covered in oozing black boils filled with blood and pus. The disease spread rapidly throughout Europe and soon had a name, the Black Plague.
The Black Plague was widely seen as an act of God for the sinfulness of the people.
What you get is a slow, lingering, painful death. And that's what is nasty. And it completely decimates populations.
Within 5 years, this previously unknown disease had wiped out nearly one-third of Europe. The equivalent, in today's numbers, of more than 300 million dead. And just like previous epidemics, the outbreaks of plague were accompanied by sightings of strange aerial phenomena.
People saw strange bronze ships spreading a mist around the entire area. Shortly after that, people began to become very sick and die.
Bronze ships, just like those reported during the Justinian Plague 800 years earlier. But what natural phenomenon could appear in the sky that would fit such a description? And what was the mysterious mist that people saw floating down from the sky?
If you ask a historian today, they would say that they were hallucinating because of the illness. But how do you get thousands of people hallucinating the same thing?
One of these supposed hallucinations featured reports of mysterious cloaked figures spraying mist on the ground. It was this report that gave rise to rumors of a black-hooded messenger of death, later known as the Grim Reaper.
In one case, the chronicle recounts a group of men mowing down wheat, and their scythes were making a loud swishing sound, but not actually cutting down the crops. We can imagine that maybe what was perceived in medieval times as scythes making a swishing sound were perhaps some kind of wand shooting some kind of aerosol into the air that was a pathogen that made so many people sick.
People reported a number of strange beings that would spray onto the wheat. And shortly after that, the Black Death occurred. And maybe your idea of the Reaper was extraterrestrial in origin.
Come to you. close. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the latest bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News, Toronto, Canada. Professor Morse of Macmillan University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from American observatories. Now, nearer home, comes a special bulletin from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton. The flash in the sky was visible within a radius of several hundred miles, and the noise of the impact was heard as far north as Elizabeth. We have dispatched a special mobile unit to the scene, and we'll have our commentator, Carl Phillips, give you a word picture of the scene as soon as he can reach there from Princeton.
E.T. Home phone.
E.T. phone home. E.T. phone home. E.T. phone home. He wants to call somebody.
What's all this shit?
E.T. phone home.
My God, he's talking.
Home.
E.T. phone home?
E.T. phone home.
And they'll come.
Come home. Home.
The fact that NASA conceal information from the public has led many to believe that they are aware of the existence of alien life. And one of the most talked about cases of a NASA cover-up comes from Dr. Edgar Mitchell. He was part of the Apollo 14 space mission in 1971, and during his 2 lunar missions, he spent 33 hours on the moon. Dr. Mitchell said that he was aware of several UFO visits during his career, but each one had been covered up. He said that workers at the space agency had described aliens as little people who look strange to us. Dr. Mitchell stated that their technology is far more sophisticated than ours, and if they were hostile, we would be gone by now. He is also told that the believed Roswell alien crash of 1947 was real, and the reason it was covered up was because the US did not want the Soviet to know of the craft's technology, and they did not know if the apparent alien being was hostile or not. Apparently, officials from NASA have commented on Dr. Mitchell's statements by saying, NASA does not track UFOs and is not involved in any sort of cover-up about alien life on this planet or anywhere in the universe. Dr. Mitchell is a great American, but we do not share his opinions on this issue. But Edgar continues to claim that aliens and alien craft are real and is positive that we are being watched right now. Another thing people more recently have pointed out is the International Space Station's HD live feed is often cut when objects are seen in space. In 2014, NASA allegedly cut the live feed coming from the Earth viewing cameras mounted on the space station just when a mysterious UFO appeared to hover over the Earth. UFO watchers claim that the drop-off in the live feeds as soon as a UFO comes into view is an obvious and deliberate attempt to hide what they believe are regular sightings of alien spacecrafts observing Earth. Some say this is the moon or a lens flare, and others believe it's an alien craft. Also, UFO watcher Toby Lund apparently spotted a UFO on the live stream outside the space station before the stream was interrupted for around 15 seconds. Needless to say, it's certainly strange that NASA cut the video when things like this happen. Maybe it's just a coincidence due to them experiencing technical difficulties, or maybe they know something that we don't.
Then what can I say? How can I disprove lies that are stamped with an official seal?
That will be all, Mr. Mulder.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there. And no one, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
Here come the Martians. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're riding on their Martian bike. And we have to find out right now, what kind of flavor do these Martians like? Here come the Martians, and they're riding on their Martian bike. Well, we have to find out right now, what kind of ice cream do the Martians like? Well, here come the Martians, why staying in such a cheap hotel? Maybe we should help. top of the Martians. Looks like the Martians ain't doing too well. Martian time, time, time. Well, it's Martian rhyme time. We got a Martian rhymes for Martian, Martian time. And the Martians got notebooks in their little hand. Well, they're strangers in this land. Martian time, it's Martian, Martian time. Well, here come the Martian Martians. They're trying to fight with rocks and sticks. Don't the Martians know better? Looks like they're up to their same old tricks. Well, here come the Martian Martians. They got notebooks in their hand. What are they trying to write down? I guess they must be strangers in this land. Martian rhyme, rhyme. Well, Martian time, time. Well, you got Martian rhymes for Martian, Martian time. See, the Martians have notebooks in their little head. See, they're still strangers in this land. Martian time, it's Martian, Martian time. Gentlemen, tell them all about it. Martian cake, we better find out right now. What kind of flavor do these Martians make? Well, here come the Martian Martians. There are Martian schoolgirls too. Well, I like the Martian schoolgirls, and I hope they like me too. Martian rhyme, rhyme, rhyme. It's Martian time, time, time. You got the Martian rhymes for Martian, Martian time. The Martians have notebooks in their little head because they're strangers in this. Martian rhyme, it's a Martian time. Me and Curly. Well, here come the Martian Martians. Well, they're baking up a Martian pie. I hope the Martians like me and give some to I. Well, here come the Martian Martians. Well, they're setting up a Kool-Aid stand. Well, where's their financial advisor? Somebody should take him by the head. Martian rhyme, rhyme, rhyme. Martian time, time, time. You got a Martian rhyme for Martian, a Martian time. And the Martians have notebooks in their little hand. They're still strangers in this land. Martian rhyme, it's Martian, a Martian time.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Carl Phillips again, out at the Wilmot Farm, Grover's Mill, New Jersey. Professor Pearson and myself made the 11 miles from Princeton in 10 minutes. Well, I hardly know where to begin to paint for you a word picture of a strange scene before my eyes, but something out of a modern Arabian night. Well, I just got here. I haven't had a chance to look around yet. I guess that's it. Yes, I guess that's the thing directly in front of me, half buried in a vast pit. Must have struck with terrific force. The ground is covered with splinters of a tree. It must have struck on its way down. But I can see the object itself doesn't look very much like a meteor. At least not the meteors I've seen. It looks more like a huge cylinder. Has a diameter of, what would you say, Professor Pearson?
What's that?
What would you say, what's the diameter of this?
About 30 yards.
About 30 yards. The metal on the sheath is, well, I've never seen anything like it. The color is sort of yellowish white. It's curious. Spectators now are pressing close to the object in spite of the efforts of the police to keep them back. Getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind standing one side, please? While the police are pushing the crowd back. Here's Mr. Wilmot, owner of the farm here. He may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Wilmot, would you please tell the radio audience as much as you remember of this rather unusual visitor that dropped in your backyard? Step closer, please. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Mr. Wilmot.
Well, I was listening to the radio.
Closer and louder, please.
Pardon me?
Louder, please, closer.
Yes. I was listening to the radio and kind of drowsing. That professor fellow was talking about Mars, so I was half chosen and half...
Yes, yes, Mr. Wilmot, and then what happened?
Well, as I was saying, I was listening to the radio kind of halfway.
Yes, Mr. Wilmot, and then you saw something.
Well, not first off. I heard something.
And what did you hear?
A hissing sound like this. Kind of like a 4th of July rocket.
Yes, then what?
I turned my head out the window and would have sworn I was asleep and dreaming.
Yes?
I seen a kind of greenish streak and then zingo. Something smacked the ground, knocked me clear out of my chair.
Well, were you frightened, Mr. Wilmot?
Well, I ain't quite sure. I reckon I was kind of riled.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you want me to tell
you? No, that's quite all right. That's plenty. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Mr. Wilmot, owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. I wish I could convey the atmosphere, the background of this fantastic scene. Hundreds of cars are parked in a field in back of us, and the police are trying to rope off the roadway leading into the farm, but it's no use. They're breaking right through. The car's headlights throw an enormous spotlight on the pit where the object's half buried. Now, some of the more daring souls now are venturing near the edge. Yeah, the silhouettes stand out against the metal sheen. One man wants to touch the thing. He's having an argument with the policeman. Now, the policeman wins. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but it's becoming more distinct. Perhaps you've caught it already on your radio. Listen, please. Do you hear it? It's a curious humming sound that seems to come from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer. Here. Now, we're not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Professor Pearson.
Yes, Mr. Brock.
Can you tell us the meaning of that scraping noise inside the thing?
Possibly the unequal cooling of its surface.
I say, do you still think it's a meteor, Professor?
I don't know what to think. The metal casing is definitely extraterrestrial. Not found on this Earth. Friction with the Earth's atmosphere usually tears holes in a meteorite. This thing is smooth, and you can see its cylindrical
just a
shape.
Minute. Something's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is terrific. This end of the thing is beginning to flake off. The top is beginning to rotate like a screw, and the thing must be hollow.
He's moving! Keep back there! Keep those men back! Keep those idiots back! Come on, get off! The top's loose!
Look out there! Stand back!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I've ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Someone's crawling
someone
out of something. I can see turning out of that black hole two luminous discs. The eyes, it might be a face. Might be almost. Good heavens, something wriggling out of the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one and another one and another one. They look like tentacles to me. Oh, yeah, I can see the thing's body. Now it's large. It's large as a bear. It glistens like wet leather, but that face, ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. It's so awful. The eyes are black and they gleam like a serpent. The mouth is this kind of V-shaped with saliva dripping from its rimless lips. It seems to quiver and pulsate, and the monster or whatever it is can hardly move. It seems weighed down by possibly gravity or something. The thing's rising up now, and the crowd falls back. It seems plenty. The most extraordinary experience, ladies and gentlemen. I can't find words. Well, I'll pull this microphone with me as I talk. I'll have to stop the description until I can take a new position. Hold on, will you, please? I'll be right back in a minute.
September 15th, 2007. Residents of Caruncas, Peru, watch in fascination as a gigantic fireball streaks across the sky. There is a loud explosion and a crash that shakes the ground violently. Something large and mysterious has fallen to Earth, causing a crater that scatters debris for nearly a mile in every direction. Fascination turns to fear when just a few days later, hundreds of people become strangely and violently ill.
An extraterrestrial fireball impacted the ground near Caracas in Peru. This impact sickened a great many people in that area.
That was never explained by authorities, who couldn't really have an answer for why a meteorite strike would cause all these people to get sick. Meteorites are thought to be very clean and without bacteria or noxious gases.
Does this event suggest that microbes and other living organisms, not of this Earth, exist somewhere in the universe?
It would be narrow-minded to accept that all of our trillions of bacteria and viruses are so unique, since they occur everywhere in every part of this world, that they wouldn't occur in other planets and other systems around the universe.
Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmot's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain's conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Now the whole field's caught up by the woods, the barns, the gas tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have a late bulletin from San Diego, California. Professor Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We continue now with our piano interlude.
Next morning, a crowd gathered on the common, hypnotized by the unscrewing of the cylinder. 2 feet of shining screw projected when, suddenly, the lid fell off. Two luminous, disc-like eyes appeared above the rim. A huge, rounded bulk, larger than a bear, rose up slowly, glistening like wet leather. Its lipless mouth quivered and slavered, and snake-like tentacles writhed as the clumsy body heaved and pulsated.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed a message that came in from Grover's Mill by telephone. Just one moment, please. At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition. The next voice you hear will be that of Brigadier General Montgomery Smith, commander of the state militia at Trenton, New Jersey.
I have been requested by the governor of New Jersey to place the counties of Mercer and Middlesex as far west as Princeton and east to Jamesburg under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter this area except by special pass issued by state or military authority. 4 companies of state militia are proceeding from Trenton to Grover's Mill and will aid in the evacuation of homes within the range of military operations. Thank you.
You have just been listening to General Montgomery Smith, commanding the state militia at Trenton. In the meantime, further details of the catastrophe at Grover's Mill are coming in. Strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assault, crawled back in their pit and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of the firemen.
A few young men crept closer to the pit. A tall funnel rose, then an invisible ray of heat leapt from man to man, and there was a bright glare as each was instantly turned to fire. Every tree and bush became a mass of flames at the touch of this savage, unearthly heat ray.
Gentlemen, I have just been informed that we have finally established communication with an eyewitness of the tragedy. Professor Pearson has been located at a farmhouse near Grover's Mill, where he has established an emergency observation post. As a scientist, he will give you his explanation of the calamity. The next voice you hear will be that of Professor Pearson, brought to you by direct wire. Professor Pearson.
One of the breaches in the rocket cylinder at Grover's Mill. I can give you no authoritative information, either as to their nature, their origin, or their purposes here on Earth. Of their destructive instrument, I might venture some conjectural explanation. For want of a better term, I shall refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. All to evidence, these creatures have scientific knowledge far in advance of our own. It's my guess that in some way they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity.
I felt I was being toyed with.
This intense heat they present
when I was on the very verge of safety, this mysterious death would leap after me and strike me down. At last I reached Maybury Hill. In the dim coolness of my home, I wrote an account for my newspaper before I sank into a restless, haunted sleep.
You've been listening to Easy Sonic Living, the Aliens episode, here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Of course, you heard throughout the program excerpts from Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. The novel was broadcast on radio in 1938 and allegedly caused public panic among its listeners, who didn't know that the Martian invasion was in fact fiction. Keep it locked here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Easy Sonic Living will be back in 2 weeks' time. Have a good night.
I awoke to alien sounds of hammering from the pit and hurried to the railway station to buy the paper. Around me, the daily routine of life, working, eating, sleeping, was continuing serenely as it had for countless years. On Horsell Common, the Martians continued hammering and stirring, sleepless, indefatigable, at work upon the machines they were making. Now and again a light, like the beam of a warship's searchlight, swept the common, and the heat ray was ready to follow.
Liquor right away. They- There's lots of fancy dudes come to our county, but they live to rue the day.
One feller from the city thought that he knew how to drink. It happens that sometimes a guy ain't tough as he might think. He ordered a shot of red eye, had a couple straight. He had a date that evening, but he got there 5 days late.
He come to town as hot as a $2 pistol. He was ready to blow like a gale.
But when we left, he was cold as a refrigerator, 'cause we ridden out of town on the rail.
Things was on the square until it was discovered that he wasn't playing fair. Things happened so sudden that he didn't have a chance. The six guns was a roaring and he went into his dance.
He got to town as hot as a $2 pistol. He was happy and proud as could be.
But when he left, he was sad as a coyote's wailing, and we mailed him back to town COD.
Got himself all tied up with a lady known as Lou, and that is something that no feller ever ought to do. She plumb took all his money and she nearly took his hide. She didn't have no buggy, but she took him for a ride.
He come to town.